She recognized the handwriting as Katerina Loss's, but the words were not Katerina's. Consul Penhallow, this is Maya Roberts, temporary leader of the New York PAC. We understand you are doing what you can to bring our Luke and the other prisoners back. We appreciate that. As a sign of our good faith, I wish to pass a message to you. Sebastian and his forces will attack Alicante tomorrow night. Please do what you can to be ready. I wish we could be there fighting by your side, but I know that is impossible. Sometimes, it is only possible to warn and wait and hope. Remember that the Clave and the Council, Shadowhunters and Downworlders together, are the light of the world. With hope, Maya Roberts. With hope. Gia folded the letter again and slipped it into her pocket. She thought of the city out there under the night sky, the pale silver of the demon towers soon to turn to the red of war. She thought of her husband and her daughter. She thought of the boxes and boxes that had arrived from Teresa Gray only a short while ago, rising up through the earth in Angel Square, each box stamped with the spiral symbol of the labyrinth. She felt a stirring in her heart, some fear but also some relief that finally the time was coming. Finally the waiting would be over. Finally they would have their chance. She knew that the Shadowhunters of Alicante would fight to the last, with determination, with bravery, with stubbornness, with vengeance, with glory, with hope.
21. The Keys of Death and Hell.
God, my head, Alex said as he and Jace knelt beside a ridge of rock that crowned the top of a gray, scree-covered hill. The rock gave them cover, and past it, using far-sighted runes, they could see the half-ruined fortress, and all around it, dark shadow hunters clustered like ants. It was like a warped mirror of Alicante's guard hill. The structure atop it resembled the guard they knew, but with a massive wall around it, the fortress enclosed within, like a garden in a cloister.
"Maybe you shouldn't have drunk so much last night," Jace said, leaning forward and narrowing his eyes.
All around the wall, the Andarkin stood in concentric rings, a tight group in front of the gates that led inside. There were smaller groups of them at strategic points up and down the hill. Alec could see Jace computing the numbers of the enemy, considering and discarding strategies in his head.
"Maybe you should try looking a little less smug about what you did last night," said Alec.
Jace nearly fell off the ridge.
"I do not look smug."
"Well," he amended. "No more than usual."
"Please," Alec said, pulling out his steely. "I can read your face like a very open, very pornographic book. I wish I couldn't."
"Is this your way of telling me to shut my face?" Jace inquired.
"Remember when you mocked me for sneaking around with Magnus and asked me if I'd fallen on my neck?" Alec asked, placing the tip of his steely against his forearm and starting to draw an Arazi. "This is payback."
Jace snorted and grabbed the steely from Alec.
"Give me that," he said,
and finished off the Arazi for him, with his usual messy flourish. Alec felt the numbing kick as his headache started to recede. Jace turned his attention back to the hill.
"You know what's interesting?" he said. "I've seen a few flying demons, but they're staying well away from the Dark God."
Alec raised an eyebrow.
"Dark God?
Got a better name?"
Jace shrugged. "Anyway, they're staying away from the Dark God in the hill. They serve Sebastian, but they seem to be respecting his space."
"Well, they can't be too far away," said Alec. "They got to the Courts Hall pretty fast when you triggered that alarm."
"They could be inside the fortress," said Jace, voicing what they were both thinking.
"I wish you'd managed to get the Skeptron," Alec said in a subdued voice. "I got the feeling it could take out a lot of demons. If it still worked after all these years."
Jace had an odd expression on his face.
Alec hastened to add, "Not that anyone could have gotten it. You tried."
"I'm not so sure," Jace said, his expression both calculating and far away.
"Come on, let's get back to the others."
There was no time to reply. Jace was already retreating. Alec followed him, crawling backward, out of range of sight of the Dark Guard. Once they had gone enough of a distance, they straightened up and half slid down the scree slope to where the others were waiting. Simon was standing by Izzy,
and Clary had her sketch pad and a pen out and was drawing runes. From the way she was shaking her head, tearing out the pages and crumpling them in her hand, it wasn't going as well as she might have liked. "Are you littering?" Jace demanded, as he and Alec jogged to a stop beside the other three. Clary gave him what was probably meant to be a withering look, but which came out fairly soppy. Jace returned it just as soppily. Alec wondered what would happen if he made a sacrifice to the dark demon gods of this world in exchange for not being constantly reminded that he was single. And not just single. He didn't only miss Magnus. He was terrified for him, with a deep, constant, aching terror that never went away completely. "Jace, this world has been burned to a cinder, and every living creature is dead," Clary said. "I'm fairly sure there's no one left to recycle."
"So what did you see?" Isabel demanded.
She hadn't been at all pleased to be left behind while Alec and Jace did recon, but Alec had insisted that she save her strength. She was listening to him more these days, Alec thought, in that way that Izzy only listened to people whose opinion she respected. It was nice. "Here." Jace pulled a steely from his pocket and knelt down, shrugging off his gear jacket. The muscles of his back moved under his shirt as he used the pointed tip of the steely to draw in the yellowish dirt. "Here's the dark god. There's one way in, and that's through the gate in the outer wall. It's closed, but an open rune should take care of that. The question is how to get to the gate. The most defensible positions are here, here, and here." His steely made quick swipes in the dirt. "So we could go around up the back. If the geography here is like it is in our Alicante, and it looks like it is, there's a natural pathway up the back of the hill. Once we get closer, we split here and here." The steely made swirls and patterns as he drew, and a patch of sweat darkened between his shoulder blades. "And we try to herd any demons or undarkened toward the center." He sat back, worrying at his lip. "I can take out a lot of them, but I'll need you to keep them contained while I do it. Do you understand the plan?" They all stared for a few silent moments. Then Simon pointed. "What's that wobbly thing?" he said. "Is it a tree?"
"Those are the gates," Jace said.
"Oh," said Isabel, pleased.
"So what are the swirly bits? Is there a moat?"
"Those are trajectory lines."
"Honestly, am I the only person who's ever seen a strategy map?" Jace demanded, throwing his steely down and raking his hand through his blonde hair. "Do you understand anything I just said?"
"No," Clary said. "Your strategy is probably awesome, but your drawing skills are terrible, and the Undarkin look like trees, and the fortress looks like a frog. There has to be a better way to explain."
Jace sank back on his heels and crossed his arms.
"Well, I'd love to hear it."
"I have an idea," Simon said. "Remember how before I was talking about Dungeons and Dragons?"
"Vividly," Jace said. "It was at dark time."
Simon ignored him.
"All the dark shadow hunters dress in red gear," he said, "and they're not enormously bright or self-driven. Their wills seem to be subsumed, at least in part, by Sebastian's, right?"
"Right," Isabel said, and gave Jace a quelling look.
"In D&D, my first move, when you're dealing with an opposing army like that, would be to lure away a group of them, say five, and take their clothes.
Is this so they have to go back to the fortress naked and their embarrassment will negatively affect morale?" said Jace. "Because that seems complicated."
"I'm pretty sure he means take their clothes and wear them as disguises," Clary said, "so that we can sneak up to the gates unobserved. If the other Undarkened aren't very perceptive, they might not notice."
Jace looked at her in surprise. She shrugged.
"It's in every movie, like, ever."
"We don't watch movies," said Alec.
"I think the question is whether Sebastian watches movies," said Isabel. "Is our strategy when we actually see him still, trust me, by the way?"
"It's still, trust me," Jace said.
"Oh, good," Isabel said. "For a second there, I was worried there was going to be an actual plan with, like, steps we could follow. You know, something reassuring."
"There is a plan."
Jace slid his steely into his belt and rose fluidly to his feet. "Simon's idea for how we get into Sebastian's fortress. We're going to do it."
Simon stared at him.
"Seriously?"
Jace retrieved his jacket.
"It's a good idea."
"But it's my idea," Simon said.
"And it was good. So we're doing it. Congratulations.
We're going up the hill the way I outlined, and then we're going to enact your plan when we get toward the top. And when we get there," he turned to Clary,
That thing you did in the Sealy Court. The way you jumped up and drew the rune on the wall. Could you do it again?
I don't see why not, Clary said.
Why?
Jace began to smile.
Emma sat on the bed in her small attic room surrounded by papers. She had finally liberated them from the folder she had taken from the consul's office. They were spread out on her blanket, illuminated by the light of the sun coming through the small window, though she could hardly bring herself to touch them. There were grainy photographs, taken under a bright Los Angeles sky, of the bodies of her parents. She could see now why they hadn't been able to bring the bodies to Idris. They had been stripped, their skin grey like ash, except where it was marked all over with ugly black scrawls, not like marks at all, but hideous. The sand around them was wet as if it had rained. They were far back from the tide line. Emma fought back the urge to throw up as she tried to force herself to absorb the information. When the bodies had been found, when they had been identified, and how they had crumbled away in clumps when the shadow hunters had tried to lift them. Emma. It was Helen, standing in the doorway. The light that spilled in through the window turned the edges of her hair to the color of silver, the way it had always done to Mark's. She looked more like Mark than ever. In fact, stress had made her thinner and revealed more clearly the delicate arches of her cheekbones, the points at the tops of her ears. Where did you get those? Emma raised her chin defiantly. Took them from the consul's office? Helen sat down on the edge of the bed. Emma, you have to put them back. Emma jabbed a finger at the papers. They're not going to look to find out what happened to my parents, she said. They're saying it's just a random attack by the Indarkin, but it wasn't. I know it wasn't. Emma, the Indarkin and their allies didn't just kill the shadow hunters of the Institute. They wiped out the Los Angeles Conclave. It makes sense they'd go after your parents, too. Why wouldn't they turn them? Emma demanded. They needed every warrior they could get. When you say they wiped out the Conclave, they didn't leave bodies, they turned them all. Except the young and the very old. Well, my parents were neither of those things. Would you rather they'd been turned? Helen said quietly, and Emma knew she was thinking of her own father. No, Emma said. But are you really saying that it doesn't matter who killed them, that I shouldn't even want to know why? Why what? Tiberius was standing in the door, his mop of unruly black curls tumbling into his eyes. He looked younger than his 10 years, an impression helped by the fact that his stuffed bee was dangling from one hand. His delicate face was smudged with tiredness. Where's Julian? He's down in the kitchen getting food, Helen said. Are you hungry? Is he angry with me? Ty asked, looking at Emma. No, but you know he gets upset when you yell at him or hurt yourself, Emma said carefully. It was hard to know what might frighten Ty or send him into a tantrum. In her experience, it was better to always tell him the unvarnished truth. The sort of lies people routinely told children of the "this injection won't hurt a bit" variety were disastrous when told to Ty. Yesterday, Julian had spent quite a bit of time picking broken glass out of his brother's bloody feet and had explained to him rather sternly that if he ever walked on broken glass again, Julian would tell on him to the adults and he'd have to take whatever punishment he got. Ty had kicked him in response, leaving a bloody footprint on Jules's shirt. Jules wants you to be okay, Emma said now. That's all he wants. Helen reached out her arms for Ty. Emma didn't blame her. Ty looked small and huddled, and the way he was clutching his bee made her worried for him. She would have wanted to hug him too, but he didn't like to be touched, not by anyone but Livy. He flinched away from his half-sister and moved over to the window. After a moment, Emma joined him there, being careful to give him his space. "Sebastian can get in and out of the city," said Ty. "Yes, but he's one person, and he's not that interested in us. Besides, I believe the Clave has a plan to keep us safe." I believe the same thing, Ty muttered, looking down and out the window. He pointed. I just don't know if it'll work. It took Emma a moment to realize what he was indicating. The streets were crowded and not with pedestrians. Nephilim in the uniforms of the guard and some in gear were moving back and forth in the streets, carrying hammers and nails and boxes of objects that made Emma stare. Scissors and horseshoes, knives and daggers and assorted weapons, even boxes of what looked like earth. One man carried several burlap sacks marked salt. Each box and bag had a symbol stamped on it, a spiral. Emma had seen it before in her codex, the sigil of the spiral labyrinth of the warlocks. "Cold iron," said Ty thoughtfully. "Raw, not heated and shaped, salt and grave dirt." There was a look on Helen's face, that look adults got when they knew something but didn't want to tell you what it was. Emma looked over at Ty, quiet and composed, his serious grey eyes tracking up and down the streets outside. Beside him stood Helen, who had risen up off the bed, her expression anxious. "They sent for magical ammunition," said Ty, "from the spiral labyrinth. Or maybe it was the warlock's idea, it's hard to know." Emma stared through the glass and then back at Ty, who looked up at her through his long lashes. "What does it mean?" she asked. Ty smiled his rare, unpracticed smile. "It means what Mark said in his note was true," he said. Clary didn't think she'd ever been so heavily ruined, or had ever seen the Lightwoods covered in as many of the magical sigils as they were now. She had done them all herself, putting everything she had into them, all of her desire for them all to be safe, all of her yearning to find her mother and Luke. Jace's arms looked like a map, runes spread down onto his collarbones and chest, the backs of his hands. Clary's own skin looked foreign to her when she caught sight of it. She remembered once seeing a boy who had the elaborate musculature of the human body tattooed onto his skin, and thinking it was as if he had been turned to glass. It was a bit like that now, she thought, looking around at her companions as they toiled up the hill toward the Dark Guard. The roadmap of their bravery and hopes, their dreams and desires marked clearly on their bodies. Shadow hunters weren't always the most forthcoming of people, but their skins were honest. Clary had covered herself with healing runes, but they weren't enough to keep her lungs from aching from the constant dust. She remembered what Jace had said about the two of them suffering more than the others because of their higher concentration of angel blood. She stopped to cough now and turned away, spitting up black. She wiped her hand across her mouth quickly before Jace could turn and see. Jace's drawing skills might have been poor, but his strategy was faultless. They were making their way upward in a sort of zigzag formation, darting from one heap of blackened stone to another. With the foliage all gone, the stone was the only cover the hill provided. The hill was mostly stripped of trees, only a few dead stumps here and there. They had met only a single Indarkand, quickly dispatched, their blood soaking into the ashy earth. Clary remembered the path up to the guard in Alicante, green and lovely, and looked with hatred at the wasteland around her. The air was heavy and hot, as if the burned orange sun were pressing down on them. Clary joined the others behind a high cairn. They had refilled their bottles that morning from the lake in the cave, and Alec was sharing around some water, his grim face streaked with black dust. "This is the last of it," he said, and handed it to Isabel. She took a tiny sip and passed it to Simon, who shook his head, he didn't need water, and passed it on to Clary. Jace looked at Clary. She could see herself reflected in his eyes, looking small and pale and dirty. She wondered if she looked different to him after last night. She had almost expected him to look different to her when she woke up in the morning by the cold remains of the fire, with his hand in hers. But he was the same Jace she had always loved. And he looked at her as he always had, as if she were a small miracle, the kind you kept close to your heart. Clary took a mouthful of water and passed the thermos to Jace, who tipped his head back and swallowed. She watched the muscles move in his throat with a brief fascination and then looked away before she could blush. Okay, maybe some things had changed, but this really wasn't the time to be thinking about it. "That's it," Jace said, and dropped the now empty thermos. They all watched it roll among the rocks. No more water. "One less thing to carry," he added, trying to sound light, but his voice came out sounding dry as the dust around them. His lips were cracked and bleeding slightly despite his Arazis. Alec had shadows under his eyes and a nervous twitch in his left hand. Isabel's eyes were red with dust and she blinked and rubbed at them when she thought no one was watching. They all looked pretty terrible, Clary thought, with the possible exception of Simon, who mostly looked the same. He was standing close to the cairn, his fingers resting lightly on a ledge of stone. "These are graves," he said suddenly. Jace looked up. What? These rock piles, they're graves, old ones. People fell in battle and they buried them by covering their bodies with stones. Shadow hunters, Alex said. Who else would die defending God Hill? Jace touched the stones with a leather-gloved hand and frowned. We burn our dead. Maybe not in this world, Isabel said. Things are different. Maybe they didn't have time. Maybe it was their last stand. Stop, Simon said. He had frozen, a look of intense concentration on his face. Someone's coming. Someone human. How do you know they're human? Clary dropped her voice. Blood, he said succinctly. Demon blood smells different. These are people, Nephilim, but not. Jace made a quick, quieting gesture with his hand, and they all fell silent. He pressed his back to the cairn and peered around the side. Clary saw his jaw tighten. Endarkened, he said in a low voice. 5 of them. Perfect number, said Alec with a surprisingly wolfish grin. His bow was in his hands almost before Clary could see the movement, and he stepped sideways out of the shelter of the rocks and let his arrow fly. She saw Jace's surprised expression. He hadn't been expecting Alec to move first, and then he caught hold of one of the rocks of the cairn and flung himself up and over. Isabel sprang after him like a cat, and Simon followed, fast and unerring, his hands bare. It was as if this world had been made for those who were already dead, Clary thought. And then she heard a long, gurgling cry cut abruptly short. She reached for Heosphorus, thought better of it, and seized a dagger from her weapons belt before hurling herself around the side of the cairn. There was an incline behind it, the dark guard looming black and ruined above them. 4 shadow hunters, dressed in red, were looking around in shock and surprise. One of their company, a blonde woman, was sprawled on the ground, her body pointing uphill, an arrow protruding from her throat. That explains the gurgling noise, Clary thought a little dizzily as Alec notched his bow again and sent another arrow flying. The second man, dark-haired and paunchy, staggered back with a yell, the arrow in his leg. Isabel was on him in an instant, her whip slicing across his throat. As the man went down, Jace leaped and rode his body to the ground, using the force of the fool to hurl his own body forward. His blades flashed with a scissoring motion, slicing the head off a bold man whose red gear was splotched with patches of dried blood. More blood fountained, drenching the scarlet gear with another layer of red as the headless corpse slid to the ground. There was a shriek, and the woman who had been standing behind him lifted a curled blade to slice at Jace. Clary whipped her dagger forward and let it fly. It buried itself in the woman's forehead and she folded silently to the ground without another cry. The last of the Indarkin began to run, stumbling uphill. Simon flashed past Clary, a movement too swift to see, and sprang like a cat. The Indarkin man went down with a gasp of terror, and Clary saw Simon rear up over him and strike like a snake. There was a sound like tearing paper. They all looked away. After a few long moments, Simon arose from the still body and came down the hill toward them. There was blood on his shirt and blood on his hands and face. He turned his face to the side, coughed and spat, looking sick. Bitter, he said. The blood, it tastes like Sebastian's. Isabel looked ill, in a way that she hadn't when she'd been cutting the Dark Shadow Hunter's throat. I hate him, she said suddenly. Sebastian, what he's done to them, it's worse than murder. They're not even people anymore. When they die, they can't be buried in the Silent City, and no one will mourn for them. They've already been mourned for. If I loved someone and they were turned like this, I'd be happy if they were dead. She was breathing hard. No one said anything. Finally, Jace looked up at the sky, gold eyes gleaming in his dirt-smudged face. We better get moving. The sun's going down, and besides, someone might have heard us. They stripped the gear from the bodies silently and quickly. There was something sickening about the work, something that hadn't seemed quite so horrible when Simon had described the strategy, but now seemed very horrible. She had killed demons and Forsaken. She would have killed Sebastian if she had been able to do it without harming Jace. But there was something grim and butcher-like about stripping the clothes from the dead bodies of shadow hunters, even those marked with the runes of death and hell. She couldn't stop herself from looking at the face of one of the dead shadow hunters, a man with brown hair, and wondering if he could be Julian's father. She put on the gear jacket and trousers of the smaller of the women, but they were still too big. Some quick work with her knife shortened the sleeves and hems, and her weapons belt held the pants up. There wasn't much Alec could do. He wound up with the largest of the Shadow Hunter's jackets and it bulked on him. Simon's sleeves were too short and tight. He cut the seams at the shoulders to allow himself more movement. Jace and Isabel both managed to wind up with clothes that fit them, though Isabel's was spotted with drying blood. Jace managed to look handsome in the dark red, which was nothing short of annoying. They hid the bodies behind the rock cairn and started their way back up the hill. Jace had been right. The sun was going down, bathing the realm in the colors of fire and blood. They fell into step with one another as they drew closer and closer to the great silhouette of the Dark Guard. The upward slope suddenly leveled out, and they were there, on a plateau in front of the fortress. It was like looking at one photo negative overlapping another. Carrie could see in her mind's eye the guard as it was in her world, the hill covered in trees and greenery, the gardens surrounding the keep, the glow of witchlight illuminating the whole place. The sun shining down on it during the day and the stars at night. Here, the top of the hill was barren and swept with wind, cold enough to cut through the material of Clary's stolen jacket. The horizon was a red line like a slit throat. Everything was bathed in that bloody light, from the crowd of the Indarkand who milled around the plateau, to the Dark Guard itself. Now that they were close, they could see the wall that surrounded it, and the sturdy gates. "You better pull your hood up," Jace said from behind her, taking hold of the item in question and drawing it up over her head. "Your hair's recognizable." "To the Indarkand," said Simon, who looked incredibly strange to Clary in his red gear. She had never imagined Simon in gear. "To Sebastian," Jace said shortly, and drew his own hood up. They had taken their weapons out. Isabel's whip gleamed in the red light, and Alec's bow was in his hands. Jace was looking toward the Dark Guard. Clary almost expected him to say something, to make a speech, to mark the occasion. He didn't. She could see the sharp angle of his cheekbones under the hood of the gear, the tight set of his jaw. He was ready. They all were. "We go to the gates," he said, and moved forward. Clary felt cold all over, battle coldness keeping her spine straight, her breath even. The dirt here was different, she noticed almost distantly. Unlike the rest of the sand of the desert world, it had been churned by the passage of feet. A red-clad warrior passed her then, a brown-skinned man, tall and muscular. He paid no attention to them. He appeared to be walking a beat, as were several of the rest of the Indarkand, a sort of assigned path back and forth. A white woman with graying hair was a few feet behind them. Clary felt her muscles tighten. Armitis? But as she passed closer, it was clear that her face was not familiar. Clary thought she felt the woman's eyes on them just the same, and was relieved when they passed out of her sight. The guard was looming up in front of them now, the gates massive and made of iron. They were carved with a pattern of a hand holding a weapon, an orb-tipped skeptron. It was clear the gates had been subjected to years of desecration. Their surfaces were chipped and scarred, splashed here and there with ichor and what looked disturbingly like dried human blood. Clary stepped up to place her steely against the gates, ready with an open rune already in her hand, but the gates swung wide at her touch. She cast a surprised look back at the others. Jace was chewing his lip. She raised a questioning eyebrow at him, but he only shrugged as if to say, "We go forward, what else can we do?" They went. Past the gates was a bridge over a narrow ravine. Darkness roiled at the bottom of the chasm, thicker than fog or smoke. Isabel crossed first with her whip, and Alec took up the rear, facing behind them with his bow and arrow. As they went over the bridge in single file, Clary chanced a glance downward into the crevasse, and nearly flinched back. The darkness had limbs long and hooked like spiders' legs, and what looked like gleaming yellow eyes. "Don't look," Jay said in a low voice, and Clary snapped her eyes back to Isabel's whip, gold and gleaming ahead of them. It lit the darkness so that when they arrived at the front doors of the keep, Jace was able to find the latch easily and to swing the door open. It opened on darkness, They all looked at one another, a brief paralysis.